What's going on? I can't travel to Durban, and I really need to see the team. Our telephone bill is through the roof, our server crashed, and we've lost all our files.
Are you getting frustrated with problems in your business? Win at work and calm the chaos with Vox's intelligent business solutions. Work smarter, not harder, and connect your business to the world from 899 Rand. T's and C's apply. Visit vox.co.za for more information.
Are you tired of selling a kidney for a laptop? Do you need to take notes in your family WhatsApp group without your boss thinking you're not working? Tired of explaining something when you could just draw it and share it? How about that backache? Is it heavy laptop related? Let the Mesa Fundi come to your rescue. Hashtag freedom with Fundi. Attach Microsoft Office for the ultimate experience. Make the shift and upgrade to the Mesa Fundi with Windows 10 Professional. The Mesa Fundi, flexibility reimagined. Available online and in store at all leading retailers. Mesa recommends Windows 10 Professional.
I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is Tech Central. So there have been two big announcements of investments in the South African tech space in the last few days. We reported yesterday on Data Profit's latest fundraising round led by Knife Capital. But the second was Sonari Capital's investment in Lightware LiDAR. And I'm pleased now to welcome the company's founder and CEO, James Portman, to the podcast. James, good to see you. Welcome.
Hi, Duncan. Nice to be here. Hello, everyone.
Now, James is joined by Samantha Pockroy, who is the CEO of Sonari Capital, to talk about the investment. Samantha, welcome to you too.
Thank you very much.
Now, LiDAR. I know it has something to do with lasers and measurement, and that it has applications in mapping and autonomous cars. But James, maybe take us through what it is that LiDAR does in this field.
Yeah, so even the word LiDAR is a fairly recent acronym in terms of the way that it's being used by the general public. Years back when we started experimenting with light as a method of measuring the distance to things, the term was actually laser range finder, or LRF, that was the acronym. But you can imagine LRF doesn't really roll off the tongue terribly well. And about 5 or 6 years ago, the idea of broader based applications for light as a measuring tool began to come into existence. And this has a lot to do with autonomous machines, whether it's drones or cars or even robotics. And so the term LiDAR, which actually historically meant measuring to cloud bases using laser systems, became a much more popular acronym. And it's a lot easier to say, you know, we manufacture LiDARs. Interestingly enough, about 5 or 6 years ago, if I'd have said that, nobody would have known what we were talking about. But today, I think because of the popularity of LiDAR in autonomous cars, especially, I think the general public has now heard the term and they recognize it as a sensor technology.
So James, take me through exactly what it is you guys do. Do you design and build your own hardware?
Yeah, we do everything, in fact. And I know I get a lot of raised eyebrows when we talk about a small South African company designing world-class LiDAR systems, doing everything from the hardware design, the mechanical and optical designs, all the electronics, the software and integration that goes with these systems. But that's what we do as a company. And it's been a fascinating journey to see the way that LiDARs have found application over time. As opposed to often what happens is I think a lot of engineers tend to create wonderful products and they think, you know, I've got a wonderful solution for something, but then they go out and look for a problem. We found the world of LiDAR has sort of worked the other way around, where a whole suite of new problems have come into existence. And it turns out that LiDAR happens to be an ideal solution for those things. So as a company, we tend to try and focus on trying to match the technology to the applications that customers have in mind.
So what are some of these applications that that these companies are using your technology for?
You know, about 7 years ago, I started running a list to see what our customers were actually doing with our products. Clearly, drones have become a big area of interest. And what it does is it stops drones flying into the ground or flying into buildings or flying into trees because it can give drones eyes to see where they're going. But customers are amazing people. They come up with ideas that we as engineers would never have thought of. We have an artist out of the United States who builds interactive artworks for cerebral palsy kids so that they can interact with the light beams and play music.
Oh, that's cool.
We have companies that count cars going into malls and parking lots. And what they do is they profile a car as it comes in and change the messages on advertising boards. as the car comes past, so that it becomes customized depending on whether you're driving an SUV or whether you're driving a small mini. So customers are amazing in that respect. Their imagination is profound. And perhaps, you know, the real excitement about Lightware as a company has come in the fact that we find ourselves in possession of this amazing suite of technology, and we can make devices that work in all these different applications. Whether it's measuring the speed of a runner or a rower, we've had both of those, or whether it's as a test article for NASA to measure the speed of the drop tests for some of their capsules. We've managed to solve all of these problems. It's been wonderful.
So have you been working with any of the vehicle manufacturers to deploy your technology in autonomous vehicles?
Well, this is an interesting point, because it's always tempting as a company to go after the very biggest fish in the pond.
Yeah.
And we decided not to do that. We decided that autonomous vehicles were definitely going to attract a lot of major players, and it would be very difficult for us to compete head on with them, certainly at the early stages of development of the company. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm as ambitious as anybody else. So yes, I would ultimately like to take all the other competitors out of the marketplace and deal directly with the automotive manufacturers. But it's not the right route to market for us. Our technology has a number of different capabilities which allow us to go beyond what the automotive manufacturers are thinking about. In other words, we're not just talking about how to drive a car here. We're talking about many different kinds of autonomous machine. And when I talk about an autonomous machine, it could be a parking meter, or it could be a sensor in an old age home to make sure that somebody is still moving. It could be many different types of form, many different types of devices. And we found that that is where our niche has really become very strong. Yeah. Because we can do things smaller, lighter, at a lower cost than a company typically making automotive LiDAR.
Sure. So is there a particular industry that you focus on? Is there a particular industry that is particularly interested in your solutions?
Historically, we've generally played in the industrial space, but that has to do really with the fact that the new markets like drones, for example, and the small, what they're called UGVs, ground-based delivery vehicles, which are completely autonomous, they didn't exist 10, 20, 30 years ago when we started playing. But those markets have now become very significant. And if you look at the forecasts for sectors such as delivery drones, you're not talking about a few hundred or a few thousand drones being used for deliveries. You're talking about millions of drones. And every single one of those needs to have some kind of collision avoidance sensor on board. It needs to make sure that it's the right height above ground when it either winches down a parcel or it's going to try and land. The same with the little UGVs, the ground-based vehicles. You mustn't have them running over people or dogs or, you know, the usual chaotic environment in which we live. And so we're finding that these are the markets that are providing the greatest traction.
Interesting. Do you see drones as a delivery mechanism? I know Jeff Bezos has been talking about this for a number of years now, doing deliveries via drone for Amazon. Do you think that's a feasible prospect in the future?
Absolutely. I think perhaps what makes it difficult to use a crystal ball on this is that the solution will never be quite the way that everyone visualizes it. It'll be something slightly different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a tech company, one of the things you have to do is understand and follow the market very, very closely. So with companies like Amazon and some of the other big players, it's obviously important to be talking to the development teams all the time and to understand their vision. Now, a company like Amazon tends to want to deliver its own products.
Yeah.
Whereas you may find other companies will deliver other people's products. So we know, for example, in the medical space, the use of drones for delivery of emergency medicines has become a really big subject. And often they're operating in kind of uncontrolled environments, because it could be as a consequence of a disaster that's happened in an area, which means buildings have fallen down, trees have fallen over, power lines are all over the place. And you can't just rely on a simple GPS coordinate to get you to the right spot. You have to be able to see where you're going. So delivery, even as a market sector, is surprisingly diverse. You even get indoor deliveries, surprisingly. So GPS denied areas, for example. So it'll be very interesting to see how that market pans out. But we have no doubt there's going to be a very large issue of scale going forwards.
Yeah. Now, James, you founded this company. What were you doing before this? I mean, what's your background? Are you an engineer by training? How did you come to start Lightware? And what were you doing before you started the company?
Yeah, I am an engineer by training, and I guess when people ask me that question, it's not a normal thing as an engineer necessarily to start a company. Often as engineers, we tend to be attracted to the high technology businesses and want to just engage there. And I was very fortunate at a very young age to have the opportunity to do that. And I realized that if I wanted to express my own creativity and tackle problems that I thought were important to society as a whole, that I'd have to go further than just listening to what boss was telling me to do and, you know, saying you have to make this device. Because the question in my mind was, why? What's it for? What does it do? Why would you want to do that? And since I have a background in mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, I worked as a chemical engineer for a while. I have an interest in physics and cosmology and astronomy. And, you know, it's this diverse interest. Yeah, you can see it. Meant that I had to build a company around what I was good at and what I was interested in, because, you know, I'm pretty much unemployable otherwise. I think like most entrepreneurs. So the idea of LIDAR came up at a meeting once where somebody suggested that they had a solution to a particular distance measuring problem and they were going to use a radar system. And I made the fatal mistake of sticking out my hand and saying, well, listen, why don't we build a LIDAR system to do that? And they said, what's that? Usual story. Mm-hmm. But I had done some experiments and I was just fascinated by what this technology could do. It was unexpected. And that's a rare thing in the world of technology where you see something that you just never thought it would work like that. The only thing I can say is that about 4 years later, the company that was building the radar contacted me and asked me if they could borrow one of my LIDAR systems to test their radars. So that was the point at which I knew we were going in the right direction. And don't get me wrong, this has been a 35-year battle to get this technology to the point where there is broad commercial acceptance. This is not a trivial journey at all because it's very complex technology. But what a ride, what a rush. I mean, it's been a huge amount of fun. Such amazing customers, such amazing applications.
Yeah, fantastic. So we're going to chat now about the Sinari Capital investment into Lightware. Is this your first fundraising round, or have you been through previous fundraising rounds already, James?
Well, we are rather fortunate that we have a fairly mature management team. So as individuals in different companies, we have been through either the venture capital or the private equity or the buyout route before. Yeah. And that meant that we were able to be very circumspect about the way we did our rounds of funding. So we have been looking at it for quite a few years, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. But it was about finding the right partner. And this is not a trivial matter. You really have to get the right people to work with you if you're going to see your vision through to the end. Yeah. And we didn't want someone with a really short-term horizon. We felt if the horizon was like 12 to 18 months kind of thing, that they would have missed the greatest part of the opportunity that's coming. And we prefer a 3 to 5 to 10 year timeline in what we're doing. You know, we don't want to cut it short. It's not necessary.
Yeah, yeah. And you went the private equity route. Was that the most suitable option?
Definitely. We find particularly with funding here in South Africa that it's nice to have mature investors working with you. People who have their own vision about what they see as the value of an investment. Value to society as a whole, value to all the stakeholders in the business. And, you know, when you're trying to do something that has sociological impact, like we do a lot of conservation work, for example, helping aircraft taking photographs of animals from very specific heights so they can measure the health of the animals, you need to make sure that your investors understand that that's important to you. Mm-hmm. It might not be massively profitable in that particular niche market sector, but it's important in terms of its impact. And that's why the private equity route worked best for us, because we could find that right mentality.
Right. Well, Samantha, let me bring you in here because you represent the private equity firm who's doing the investment, Sinari Capital, with investment from a company called 27Four, which I believe is an institutional investor. You announced a couple of days ago a 25 million rand investment in Lightware LiDAR. Samantha, how did Sinari come to this deal and what's the backstory here?
Well, I should put that back to James, but I'm actually going to give a little bit of credit to our analyst, Khosi Dipkwane, who has done the arduous task of filtering through a great deal of investment opportunities that come through our door. And, you know, I did ask James, how on earth did he find us? And he said, like he does in everything in life, he did his homework. But he the company approached us, and you know, I think that it's one of those somewhat nerve-wracking aspects of the investment business is knowing that, you know, these amazing investment opportunities can come through your door and you might miss them.
Yes.
So much credit to Khosi who brought this deal through to our investment forum and said, this sounds quite interesting. And when we took our first drive out to Centurion, I must tell you, I wasn't necessarily expecting much, right? Mm. But I have to tell you how rapidly that changed when we sat around the table with James and Nadia. Such an experienced team. It's very rare in our markets to find such a great combination of, you know, established, deep, very thoughtful around the investment processes, around the financial management, around good governance, good business practices. I mean, the ISO compliance is on levels unknown. We normally are chasing the companies. In this case, the companies chasing us to meet their requirements and their deadlines. But to combine that level of rigor and sound governance and sound business practice with such an exciting growth opportunity, we left there really very, very, very shifted in our expectations of the business.
Well, that's what happens when an engineer starts a company, right, Sam?
Apparently, right?
So tell me a bit about Sonari Capital. Do you focus on the tech space specifically?
That's a great question. I've been investing in technology investments for, 16 years now? No, 14 years. But when I first started in technology, so when I moved back to South Africa from the US, I joined Ethos in their technology fund. And I couldn't for the life of me imagine why they would put me there, because I considered myself a late adopter. I think I still had a BlackBerry. So there was no intentionality, but I must tell you, it's one of the greatest, you know, missteps or unplanned steps that I took in my career. So Sonari does not specifically invest in technology. We're not a technology fund. But we have a very strong technology flavor, and a lot of that comes from the fact that we believe that technology is no longer a vertical. Mm-hmm. In our digital world today, you need to know what the opportunities and threats are of digital, and if you don't, it is very much to your peril. So we think that that's very important. And although it's quite common in the venture capital space to have technology investment experience, it's less typical in private equity. Mm-hmm. So it is one of our differentiating factors of our investment committee. All four members have between 10 and over 30 years of technology related investment experience. So definitely we do, but it's not technology. Of our six investments, I would say only one is deep tech. Mm-hmm. And many of the others are more services and manufacturing that's enabled by technology. Or even in our education business, where we use a digital perspective to help children to develop future-focused work skills. So we definitely bring that technology lens to everything we do.
So beyond Lightwear, what are some of the other companies that you've invested in?
So we have we've got a range, and maybe to share. So I mentioned some businesses and services. We started off in a geospatial services business, which does location-based data and solutions. And so basically, if you're looking to expand your geographic footprint and it has anything to do with income, demographics, expenditure, you would use Fernridge. We have a distribution business. We have a business that's in the IoT space, specifically for insurance. So very exciting things happening there. I think particularly, and what we've seen is the impact of COVID on our business is really all of these emerging mega trends, which really, if you think about it, COVID just served to enhance a lot of what was already happening. But certainly the importance of the home with work from home and with, I think, a growing sense of cost consciousness and a growing sense of needing to feel safe and secure. Our smart home solutions that Sensor Networks does is really important. We have a business, an international business, so in many ways similar to our investment in Lightwear, in a business called Snapt that does software, you know, Snapt, yeah. And that's also similar to James's business, you know, vast majority, more than 90% of the revenues are generated from around the world. And then a schools business, and it's affordable and accessible schools business. It's the largest independent chain in the Free State.
Great. Well, I know this investment you've just made in Lightway is through a new fund called the Lower and Mid Market Fund, or LMM Fund. That's a $1.5 billion, I beg your pardon, fund that Sonari has created. Tell me a little bit about that fund.
Give or take the rand and the dollar conversion. You know, I think when we started, it was R1 billion, and then suddenly $100 million was no longer R1 billion, and now we've got almost double the fund size. Somewhere in that region.
Great.
Sorry, Duncan, what was your question?
I was just asking what the specific focus is of this fund.
Okay. So really, Sonari has always focused on what we call the lower and mid-market. So it's actually quite a wide range in terms of the enterprise value of these businesses. And, you know, it can start with businesses, you know, with, say, 75 million, 100 million rand enterprise value, all the way up to 750 million rand enterprise value. And the reason why it's such a broad range is because of the type of investment strategies that we follow. So in the case of Lightway, it's very much a growth equity investment that we're putting capital in to expand, in this case in particular, our international presence. But we also have rollout strategies like in the schools. So it's taking existing businesses and expanding both organically and by acquisition. And then also buy and build strategies for platform investments, where you may start with one small asset and then following a number of acquisitions, you're really starting to get into scale. So our focus is on helping businesses to get to scale. What this new fund will do is enable us to deploy our strategy at greater scale. So, you know, we've had a history of building up our business. We initially raised capital from high net worth individuals and family offices. And so this will be our first institutional fund and really enable us to cover the full spectrum of our target market.
Right. Now, the company called 27Four is participating in this investment. Tell me a bit about them.
So 27Four is our first institutional investor. It is into our LMM fund. So they are coming in as a limited partner. But what's really exciting and what 27Four does is, you know, they have a very intentional mandate around supporting emerging managers. And, you know, this is something that, you know, and from a great deal of experience in this, and any entrepreneur will experience this, but I can tell you this, being an emerging fund manager, it's like being an entrepreneur of entrepreneurs, because our product is the entrepreneurs. So having institutional backing, institutional investors that see the opportunity to back an emerging manager. So we're not a first-time manager, but as a first institutional investment. And they're very much focused on that. They're also very much focused on transformation. So our fund is a majority Black-owned fund and managed fund, and also on women empowerment. They also have a very strong mandate and actually have raised some of their capital from the Jobs Fund. So we, and along with James and our other investments that go into this fund, have an enormous focus, and James can share, or probably less James and more Nadia can share, just how focused we have been on making sure that as much as this is about taking a business onto a global platform, that really what we're doing is we're creating jobs and we're creating skills in our local economy. So we really had that backing. We're excited that 27Four has not only committed to our fund, but that they have offered to warehouse these investments prior to first close of the fund.
Great. James, let me bring you back in. So you've raised 25 million rand through this transaction. What are you going to use it for?
What we've found is over the last few years, the maturity of the markets that we're tackling has begun to climb. Prior to that, it was very much a kind of a Wild West situation where, you know, everyone was claiming they were going to have the latest autonomous device. They were going to have the latest drones. They were going to have the latest cars. They were going to have the latest delivery vehicles. But nobody knew who was going to win that game. As a consequence, things like regulations, the requirement for support and so on were kind of like put on the back burner for most of our customers. So what has changed in the last 24 months in particular is these companies have begun to mature. And with that comes the requirement to meet standards, comes the requirement to provide excellent customer service. And when I say excellent, I mean 24/7, you've got to have technical support people available. Also to have regional support. So a lot of the American customers need support in the United States. We do business in the Far East, we do business in Europe, and all of these areas need direct support. So what's nice about this particular round of funding is that it will allow us to mature with our customers. In other words, to follow their journey. And at the end of the day, you know, the way that we will succeed is by making sure that our customers succeed. So whenever they have a problem, whenever they have a question, we have to say, yes, we will fix it for you. And of course, if you have limited resources, that is very, very difficult to do. But we're kind of lucky now that we kind of know who's going to be the winners in this game. And as a consequence of that, we can take cues from them as to what they expect. So, for example, I can tell you that regulation is going to play a huge role in the drone delivery business. The FAA ultimately governs that. So we are already implementing higher quality standards within the business, going to AS9100, which is aircraft specification manufacture, because we know that a year or two from now, our customers are going to demand components that are made to aircraft grade specification because the FAA is defining the regulations. You cannot do this through internal rate of return. You can't just invest your profits in that. You need more money than that. These are expensive processes. But what's nice about it is that we will end up with a global business which is very stable, that has the capacity to service these new industries as they grow to maturity. And that's, again, answers part of your earlier question as to why private equity as opposed to venture capital. It's because we're no longer in that Wild West environment. We're definitely in the environment where the markets are maturing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So are you looking to put boots on the ground in specific countries?
Yes, we will. I'm not sure it's so much country as region. So for example, in the Far East, the markets are relatively fragmented. We have South Korea, we have India, we have China, we have quite a few places. So I don't think we'd open offices in all of those areas. That doesn't make sense. But we need some kind of regional support. Europe as well is relatively fragmented. So again, we would probably just have one regional office in that area. And of course, the United States, well, no one can really predict exactly what's going to happen from a business point of view in the United States. But I think one thing is fairly certain, boots on the ground in the US is a very good idea. Customers there are used to immediate support. Yeah. It's a very service industry type of country. So they need a phone number, they need somebody to answer the phone, and they say, can you send it to me now, please? And it must be FedExed in 2 hours, you know, that kind of thing. So we'd have to provide that level of service.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, James, I'm interested. You're a South African company, an advanced technology company that's emanated from South Africa. Does that give you any advantages, or is it mainly disadvantages as you approach the global stage?
Well, of course, the biggest advantage is the weather's great. And you know, when you have to work 24/7 and you only get a few hours outside every week, it's really nice to know that it's not raining. So that's my main reason for actually staying here in this country, and I will be here for a while. However, I think that there's a complete misconception about South Africa as a competitive environment, because in the end, competition and competitive strength tends to come from the individuals who are driving a business. Yeah. I think as long as the infrastructure is there and the resources are available, then it doesn't really matter where you are. There's no reason why you shouldn't be able to compete. You know, the world is so interconnected these days that you can't say, oh, because you're far away, it's a problem. Well, if you're in the US, you're far away from China. So, you know, that's never been a problem. Why should it be a problem that we're here in South Africa? You know, I can get anything from the United States in 2 or 3 days, and I can ship anything to the United States in 2 or 3 days. What really makes South Africa special from my point of view is that we've had the opportunity to bring on quite a few young, up-and-coming qualified people into the company, not on a permanent contract basis, but to test them out and see what they're doing. And we use them to help develop our systems, to help work on our production lines, to help get a feel for technology generally. And these are new graduates who can't find jobs.
Right.
And what it has really taught me is that the skill levels in South Africa are actually world-class. I think we completely underestimate what we're capable of doing. And don't ask me where that mindset comes from, because I'm not 100% sure. But there is nothing that I can't do in South Africa that I can only do in another country. It's just not like that at all. The people are fantastic. The infrastructure is as good as anywhere else. You only have to drive along a California highway to know that our roads are no worse than theirs are. you know, the availability of people, or the availability of resources, and now the availability of funding as well, means that this is an amazing place to do business. And certainly the cost of doing business here is generally lower as well.
Yeah. So you're staying?
Absolutely, yes. Don't get me wrong, we still will think of ourselves as a global company.
Yeah.
So we will certainly have a lot of presence in other parts of the world. But I'm not seeing any disadvantages to being here at all. Nothing.
Yeah. That's good to hear. How much do you do by way of R&D? I presume it's a big portion of your budget.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the nice things about having worked in an industry for more than 30 years is you do have a good feel for what it takes to do the product development.
Yeah.
And this is perhaps part of our secret sauce as to why, as a relatively small company, we've been able to be so effective. And that is because we're driven very strongly in every aspect of the business by efficiencies. So how do you do product development efficiently?
Yeah.
And this is not a simple answer, unfortunately. And I won't wander off into the theory of how you develop high-tech products. But if you look at the way SpaceX designs high-tech products, for example, they have a very interesting solution, which is one that we've been using for many years. And that is, you have to iterate fast. Mm-hmm. But how do you iterate fast? You don't build the product, you build the system. You build the system behind the product. You build the people, the infrastructure, the equipment, the training, and then you practice. And you do it again, and you do it again. And so every time a customer comes to you and says, I have this problem, can you help? You say, all right, let's give it a go. And you run it through as a process, and you look at the process afterwards, and you say, was it a good process? Was it a slow process? Was it an expensive process? Did it solve a customer's problem? Did it not solve a customer's problem? And you change it. And you do it again, and you do it again. And the faster you can do it, the better you become. So really, our product development is driven by extremely rapid innovation. And it means that we literally launch a new product every month. That gives you some idea of the cycle time we're talking about. And this is a product that's extremely complicated. But that capacity allows us to follow markets, allows us to respond to customers, and allows us to stay right on the cutting edge of what's possible.
Has the COVID-19 impacted you particularly?
You know, I think everyone has had some impact as a consequence of this. I don't think anyone can say that they didn't have any impact. In our particular case, the impacts have had a nice balance of positives and negatives. From a positive, I think as Sam mentioned earlier on, it kind of reinforced the macro trends. And these were macro trends that we were following. The idea of autonomous delivery, the idea of no contact devices. The idea of privacy was an interesting one as well, where a lot of companies are looking at using camera systems everywhere. And globally, this has become a big concern as far as invasion of privacy comes about. But LiDAR systems can do similar things to cameras, but they don't recognize faces.
Yeah.
Which is terrific. So, you know, like I say, you know, there's an amplification of some of our market opportunities as a consequence of that. As a business, it's hard to run a business during COVID-19, make no mistake. I mean, deliveries get delayed, you know, the number of flights in and out has reduced. But I must admit, by today, we're pretty much back to 100% normal, and we haven't had any more delays as a consequence.
That's good to hear. James, before I let you go, where do you see Lightware in 5 years from now? What do you want this company to be?
Oh, I have great ideas. You know, the thing about building a company is that you want to build a sustainable company. You want to build a company that leaves a legacy. You want to build a company that is world-class. You want to build a company with an attitude of winning, not second rate. And I'd like to see the combination of Sonari and Lightware produce this kind of globally powerful platform, because I think we can. I think South Africa is the perfect launching point. I think we have a wonderful opportunity here. I'd like to see 100 engineers employed in the business, but I'd like to see them all fighting against, you know, global competition and working at that level. We don't need to be second rate. We only need to be first rate. So I think opportunities are massive, and I'm really looking forward to it, I must say.
Fantastic. This has been a great conversation, James. James Portman is founder and CEO of Lightware LiDAR, and he was joined by Samantha Pokroy, who is the CEO of Sonari Capital. Thanks for your time, and thank you both for talking to Tech Central today.
Thank you, Duncan.
Thank you, Duncan.